Well, hey there, everyone. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 272 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record nerds and music fans around the world. I hope you're well. This week's strap in, we've got a fantastic conversation here with none other than Tommy Clafetis, drummer of the Dead Daisies, who is here not only to talk about the new gig with the Dead Daisies, their upcoming Get Out of the House tour, the track Like No Other 2021, and more, but Tommy is also going to share about his previous gigs, which includes playing with Black Sabbath on their final tour. We also talk about Tommy playing gigs with his father in Detroit, his discipline, his work ethic, his influences, vinyl, and more. Tommy's a really funny guy, very driven, and I think history is going to show Tommy as one of the best and busiest drummers of our generation. Now, I happen to think that Tommy is a perfect fit for the Dead Daisies, and if you haven't heard it yet, go to the streaming services and check out the Dead Daisies' new track, Like No Other 2021. It's killer, it rocks, it swings, it's got Tommy on the kit, and it's a taste of what you'll get when you go to see the Dead Daisies on the Get Out of the House tour. Yep, tour dates are appearing at thedeaddaisies.com. Go over there now, secure your ticket, see this amazing lineup, which includes Glenn Hughes on vocals and bass, Doug Aldrich and David Lowy on guitars, and of course, Tommy warming up the drum stool. And looky here, if you enjoyed today's conversation, head over to patreon.com/vinylguide and see a video of Tommy and I's conversation. Yep, that's right. Patrons of The Vinyl Guide always get a bunch of extras. If you go up to patreon.com/vinylguide and help support the show, I'm always throwing extra stuff up there. Bonus episodes, extended interviews, and more. This week, you get a video, too. A video of Tommy and I's conversation, and it's available only to the patreon.com/vinylguide people. Nowhere else. So, plenty of visuals to enjoy. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, where you get to enjoy the rest of the show. And by the way, I really quickly want to thank our entire Patreon community. You guys are absolutely golden, helping support the show and keeping my stomach full of burritos while I churn out these episodes. I also want to give a big shout out to the newbies of our Patreon community. Recent people who joined include David Shanks, Deborah Enos Clark, Henry Dinage, Akane, Tabitha Torrance, and Jay. Thank you so much for becoming patrons of the Vinyl Guide podcast. And just a quick note, we are brought to you this week in part by our friends at AudiophileUSA.com, the online record shop that only sells used, excellent, and near-mint vinyl records. What are you, crazy? There's no need to go to eBay or Discogs and guess the condition of what you'll get, because everything at AudiophileUSA.com is in gorgeous shape. Head up there now, see their newest stock, search and dig for the deals. AudiophileUSA.com has over 42,000 titles in stock, thousands of rock and heavy metal records, and they ship around the world. That's AudiophileUSA.com, home of the Holy Grails. All right, with the upfronts out of the way, let's start the Vinyl Guide interview with drumming legend, the man behind many a drum kit, Mr. Tommy Clafetis.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you and I can see you.
It's a beautiful thing, this technology now, isn't it?
My goodness, you're handsome. Hang on a sec. I'm ovulating. Hang on a sec. Look at you.
Oh, hey. God, we got a real live one here, huh, Nate?
Hey, you shaved the beard.
I did.
Was that your COVID project?
No, I would have a beard if it was my COVID project. I'm getting older and it's too much gray.
Oh, okay. Well, you're looking great, man. Good to see you.
Hey, thank you. Keep going. I like where we're headed already.
All right. No worries. All right. So, look, lots of new news for you right now. Joining the Dead Daisies, talk of a tour, and Like No Other 2021 remix. A lot is happening right now.
Yeah, I've single-handedly destroyed the Dead Daisies in about 1 week.
Like a hand grenade. Boom.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to tell you, I think it's a wonderful fit. I was listening to this album, Holy Ground, and this is an album that is meant to be played live.
They made a great album. I really enjoyed the album. There's some great songs. And of course, you know, like everybody's talking about the addition of Glenn Hughes on vocals and bass. He's awesome. And Doug is awesome. And David is awesome. So I just hope to add my part to it, you know?
Oh, I think you will. So have you guys actually been physically in a room together, or is this all virtual?
We have not. I've had dinner with Doug and Glenn, but that's about it. We're supposed to all convene and do some rehearsals this upcoming later in the month now and go jam through some things and see what works and see what doesn't.
Well, look, a lot of dates starting to pop up at thedeaddaisies.com. The Get Out of the House tour throughout parts of the U.S. starting in June. And I even see some international dates starting to crop up, which is a very good sign that things are starting to get back to normal a bit.
Yeah, it seems like it's just the clouds are just starting to part. You know, I'm not getting too excited yet, but I know we'll be doing these dates in the States. You know, like everybody, we can't wait. It's been so long where everybody's so apprehensive. So when things do bust loose and it's totally 100% free, what a beautiful thing it's going to be.
So look, we'll talk more about the Dead Daisies here in a bit. I want to hear all about the phone call. I want to hear all about some of the plans. But really quick, let's go back to February 2017. This is okay. The last show of Black Sabbath, the end. What okay. is that day like? How do you wake up that morning? What is that last day like? You know you're going to be playing the last gig with Black Sabbath that day.
I, to be honest with you, I try to treat it like any other show day. You know, to me, any gig could be the last gig. You know, this whole pandemic thing is a lesson in that. You know, you never know when you're going to be able to get back on stage. You never know when you're going to be dead. You never know. So they're all special gigs to me. Of course, you know, that has, you know, a monumental occasion for fans and everything. But to me, when I'm in that situation, I have a job to do. So I don't get too emotional about it. Again, I wasn't in the band for 50 years and it wasn't my band, but I was proud to play. I was very proud to play on stage with Ozzy, Tony, and Geezer, and to add what I do on stage, or not add, but be a part of what they do and help bring the music to the fans. You know, that's why I was there, just to help bring the Black Sabbath music to the fans. But the last show, we nailed it, man. Mm-hmm. We really nailed it. And you would think sometimes, you know, they were filming and recording, and you know, it's the last show in Birmingham. There's a lot of people, and people are packing their bags, and you know, there's a lot of hustle and bustle. So you really, to me, I tighten up and I just try to focus in those situations.
Well, you are the consummate professional, and I'm sure you treat every gig like it is the last gig and take it very serious.
I try to treat every gig like it's the first gig and the last gig, because they're all important. The only reason I've gotten anywhere, it's because all the gigs, even at the Holiday Inns, even at Joe's Bar, even at, you know, whatever it may be, they were learning lessons and things that I took pride in.
What do you think gives you that professional edge? Like, what sets you apart from, say, other drummers that fill the sorts of drum stools that you fill?
I don't know that anything does set me apart, but I do know that I'm not technically the best drummer in the world, but I do know I have a lot of drive. There's something in my blood and there's something in my family line that where, you know, there's work ethic in my family. And I was raised a certain way and I owe a lot to that side of things. It's not necessarily a musical thing that sets me apart. I would say it's just, you know, where I'm from. I'm from Detroit. It's a little different out there. How I was raised was a little different. I was raised a little more strict, and I hold myself accountable for things. And the way I conduct myself is, when it comes to music, it's who I am as a person. So it means a lot to me to try to be the best that I could be under any given circumstances.
Were you raised in a musical family? Did you have a lot of records and music around the house?
Well, absolutely. My father was a musician, and it wasn't that I did so much listening as I did so much playing. I had a lot of experience and I started early, and it's not just so much learning music. It's learning about the music business. It's learning how to take care of your drums, if I was to do anything in my house, you had to do it to the fullest. That's what was expected of you. So everything was a learning lesson. And as a kid, you go, Jesus Christ, this is a pain in the ass. But I thank my parents for raising me that way. You know?
Was it? Did your dad play at home, or did he tour? Did he play at clubs?
No, he played gigs all. You know, growing up, he had a full time day job, and he would play 250 gigs a year. And I started playing in his band, so you know that was out of necessity to make money. You know, because we weren't rich by any means. And I learned, you know, I would see my dad go to work, get home at 5 o'clock, leave at 6, get home at 4 in the morning and do it again, and do it again. And that's, you know, when you're raised seeing that, I'm sure hopefully everybody out there has a similar story of learning mm-hmm. things from their parents and, you know, instilling values. And now I'm a father, so I hope to instill those values in my daughter.
Right. So it sounds like that's where you got your work ethic. Your dad.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all born with something. I don't think you can force anything upon people because, you know, some things are in your blood, but some things are learned, and some things you just have that you need brought out of you. You know, it's like music. You know, you may be in a musical family or you may not be, but you can't teach somebody music if they don't have it inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel that way. You can't just go to school and learn, you know, it's like, I can't go learn to be in the NBA. I just don't have it. Doesn't matter how many coaches or what somebody tells me, I physically can't do it, nor do I have the mental capacity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
we all have what we're meant to do. And I'm very blessed and feel very lucky that I found that at an early age, and I had the infrastructure through my parents to allow me to follow my dreams. It was never said that it couldn't be a reality, that I couldn't do something. It was only if you work hard enough can you do it.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, seeing your trajectory through these years, they'd be absolutely delighted. But again, it's hard to be able to do what you've done without that work ethic, without that drive within you to say, you know what, I'm going to keep pushing myself. I'm going to try to go from strength to strength, and I'm going to try to challenge myself to not get too complacent.
Yeah, I just don't complacent when it comes to music isn't involved in my, I feel horrible. I mean, I've never not given it my all, and that's not trying to gloat. It's just how I'm built.
Right.
It is what it is, man. It's just what I do, and it's not anything more special than anybody else, but I do consider it my craft, and it's not just a hobby to me. It's how I support my family. It's how I, you know, it's my livelihood. It's my craft, and I love it, mm-hmm. you know? And when you love something, you have to love the things that people hate about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I got off on all the early hard years. I knew that it was, you gotta be in it even in the hard times, you know, to fight through to, you know, it's like right now, it's a crazy time, but I'm still going to be ready when opportunity presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's on me. If the Dead Daisies called and I couldn't play drums because I hadn't been practicing, then I would have a problem now, wouldn't I?
No, sure. Going back to the beginning, what were the sort of records that you had? What were the ones that kind of drove you and kind of lit the switches in your head?
Gosh, it was so early. I was so young, but my dad raised me on Chuck Berry and Little Richard, and he took Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino, and he would take me to see all these guys, and we would watch concerts over and over and over from the Toronto Rock Festival, or, you know, like in Italy, Ray Charles and Little Richard, you know, like rock and roll revival shows, and we would watch over and over and over and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. I just watched everything. My uncle was a musician. He played Dixieland jazz in New Orleans. He was down there for, I believe, maybe 60 years. And he played until he unfortunately passed away a couple of years. You know, he got cancer and he literally couldn't play. And he died weeks later because he played till the very end. So that's kind of the cloth that I'm built from. Is we're musicians. It's a craft. It's something that you work towards, you work on. It's a lifelong journey.
When you were young, playing with your dad in those clubs, I'm assuming this is your early to late teens. Is that?
It's before my teens. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you were playing in these clubs. I imagine
it's actually stupid when I think about it that I, you know, I'm playing. because clubs in Detroit, they weren't, they weren't like nice clubs. They were like smoke filled barroom brawl clubs, you know, with adults and sex was involved and smoke and alcohol and fights and women, you know. I just saw a lot of things early, playing these kind of places, and you learn a lot about life. You know, you learn maybe what not to do was a good lesson. I learned a lot of what not to do's, what not to be like when it came to other musicians or just people, or, you know, like it's an eye opener to have that much experience starting early.
Wow. So you're 10 years old, you're spending some late evenings in some somewhat dodgy clubs here and there. And then the next day you're waking up going to school and doing a geography test.
Yeah. And I literally can't believe I would get home at 4 and get up at school at, you know, I mean, I would be falling asleep in class, I remember, but, and my mom would, she would get mad, but she would just, as if I got up for school, it could continue, you know?
Right. Okay. So there were probably some very challenging conversations with your gigging schedule alongside your study.
It was just what I did. I was on a war path to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be stopped. You know, I knew from the time I got drums where I was going. And that's a beautiful thing, because I know a lot of people who, you know, they're 40 and they don't really know, you know? So I was very much blessed that way, because I never got in trouble. I never got involved in drugs. I never got involved in alcohol. I don't really think I would have anyways, but I had a laser beam focus on where I wanted to go, and trouble wasn't an option. You know, failing wasn't an option.
You're playing these clubs with your father. You're drinking in some of the music that was important to him. What sort of music started coming into your life that was from a different direction other than your parents?
Well, I never got stuck in really my own thing. I mean, I always liked Elvis. All my musical influences really came from the music that I was playing, and then whatever gigs came out of it, because literally it was nonstop. I didn't I never played in like a teenage band or an original band. I just never did that because I was always working.
Right.
Meaning getting paid or, you know, whatever it was, not much, mind you, but, you know, it was always a job. You know, it wasn't a goof off to me. And even to this day, I don't like when music is like a goof off. I don't get enjoyment out of it. There should be a, you know, I look at it as we're performing for people, and, you know, there's a certain standard. And that doesn't mean I won't jam, but, you know, I've had great jams with great musicians, and it doesn't have to be a big show or anything, but it's like, you should try to come together and make some good music is, you know, the point.
Sure, sure. But you've got these influences coming in from your dad, from your family. Was there a point where you brought home a Kiss record or a Motley Crue record? They were like, what the hell is
this? I wasn't really that guy. I was always like into, even early, like, you know, it goes back to my uncle and my dad and the influences they brought into me of, you know, my uncle, he loved Louis Armstrong, and he was actually personal friends with him, and he played in Louis Armstrong's wife's, Lil Hardin's band. So there was that side of things. We would go down there every year, and I would play the jazz fest, and I would get immersed in his kind of music, you know, and I would study how to play this Dixieland jazz. And then I would play rock with my dad, and we would play Chuck Berry. And then driving home from the gigs, we would listen to the blues channel at 3 a.m. driving home. And it was just, or it would be backing different acts from the 50s and 60s with my dad's group, where, you know, I had to learn 45 songs as a kid. And so there was too much going on to like go mess around with, you know, kid rock and roll stuff. Not that I don't like certain things on my own, but, you know, I love Bob Seger, and I loved, you know, my dad took me to see Alice Cooper when I was a kid, and I liked Alice Cooper as a kid. And my dad took me to see Iggy Pop. And I remember I loved the edginess to it. You know, actually there's a buddy I wrote a song with. I saw him play with Iggy Pop when I was a kid, and then he became a buddy of mine. It's just like certain shows had an impact on me. And seeing, you know, even things from when I was a kid, when I saw Chuck Berry and I saw Little Richard, and Chuck Berry would just walk on stage and nobody knew he was there. And he would just plug in and start playing because it was 8 o'clock and that's when he was supposed to go on. And they didn't even turn on the PA yet. Like, I saw a lot of cool things that really stuck in my memory that go, oh, wow, that's pretty neat what's happening right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Taking a lot of mental notes.
Mental notes that are like may come back 30 years later when you're on stage and you need to pull a trick out of the old cap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Give me an example of what that would be.
Okay, well, here's a more recent one. It's like, you know, playing with these great guys who have done it so long, like playing with Ozzy. I've seen him do things on stage where you go, how clever is that? How clever. You know, we were on stage one time and we did Mama, I'm Coming Home. And then he didn't like how he sang the song, right? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't happy, and maybe the crowd wasn't so happy. And he just literally did the whole song again, and he sang it perfect. And the crowd went bonkers. They went so nuts that you go, the guy is a genius. You know, it takes some experience and some confidence to just go, oh, I'm just going to go do it again. Yet it's so simple, the concept, but not many people would do that. And I go, I put that in my back pocket. I could use that one day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Those things are what make, you know, they turn a negative into a positive. You know, when I watch mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali, it's like a Muhammad Ali move to me, what he did. You know, when you're young Muhammad Ali and you're young and strong and you can just fight till the end of day because you have so much energy. But then old Muhammad Ali knew how to adjust. He knew how to stand against the ropes and let the guy wear himself out. And he would wait till the perfect moment to turn it on and cremate him. You know, that to me has as much to do about music as anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, music is timing and it's presentation and knowing when to go for the throat kind of thing, where a lot of musicians, I see bands or I see, you know, guitar players or drummers, and it's just endless. You know, if you're going endless on 10, then it doesn't really do anything. You know, there's nowhere to go, and the crowd doesn't get a breath, you know. So when I would go see Chuck Berry and he would be playing with the crowd for 30 minutes and you're like, what's going on? Almost people are like stunned, like, what's happening? This is Chuck Berry. And then he flips the switch and it's 25 minutes of rock time and people are just going berserk. So it's knowing how to flip on a dime and when to turn things that really make great, at least great live artists, I've noticed. When I have to play a drum solo or do something like that, I think of those things. I have those things in my mind in order to manipulate the audience of where I want them to go.
Right. So in a way, not just playing your instrument, but you're also playing the audience in a way.
All the time. Absolutely. They want to be played.
Right.
You know, they want to be led. You can't have 80,000 people out there and not be confident of where you're going to take them, you know, because they feel that. They also feel when you're in total control, because people, we all want to be led. It's like when you're a kid, you want discipline. You want direction. Crowds, the same thing. They want to be rocked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they know when it's false and they know when it's phony, and they feel when you're genuine, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether you're playing drums or you're a front man or you're a keyboard player, you know, it all translates in a certain way. To me, anyway.
Well, I would imagine in that situation you just described, Ozzy felt the crowd, I won't say turning, but felt the drop in energy. He could have probably just gone to the next song and then scooped
up
some energy
later. Well, everything would have been fine. Everything would have totally been fine. And maybe people didn't even notice, but he turned it into a moment. He turned it into a rock and roll moment. When you went to that concert, somebody's going to go, I was at that concert and I remember that and people went crazy and it was awesome. You know, those are the special things. It's not when everything is like every show's the same and it's all good. You know, I've learned as I got older, you watch the Rolling Stones, you don't really know what you were going to get all the time. And there's something exciting to that.
Right.
You know?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, it's Nate here. I'm going to get you right back to our interview here in a moment, but I first got to tell you all about the Groove Washer Record Cleaner. The Groove Washer is the best record cleaner I've ever used. I use it every day. I absolutely trust it. And let me tell you, you got to be careful about some of these record cleaners out there. You don't know what's in some of those no-name brands, what chemicals they're using, and God forbid you use the wrong one, and you go to pull your records out a couple years later out of the shelves, and they're all gummed up and something's goofy with them, right? You don't want to take that chance. Get the name that everyone trusts. Get the Groove Washer. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record shop, or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE10 at checkout. That code will get you a discount on the best record cleaner in the world, the Groove Washer. Groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits.
So when you were playing with Black Sabbath, did you feel that you were in Black Sabbath, or did you feel you were playing with Black Sabbath? Did you emotionally keep yourself one step away from the other members of the band?
Not at all, nah, no. But I mean, I had respect that I was an original member. I was not an original member. Of course, I always conduct myself that way. You know, I didn't pave the way with you guys for 50 years. I'm fully aware of that. But when I'm on that stage, I'm in that band because I have a job to do. And when I'm on stage, to me, it's four guys. You can't do it without a drummer. And you guys chose me and I'm here and I'm going to rock my guts out for you. Mm-hmm. So you can't, again, it's like controlling the audience. They're going to feel me if I'm weak. They don't want a weak drummer. They want the drummer who's going to lead them, you know, home towards the end of the concert. That's right. What they want.
Now, in the days leading up, in the day of the actual gig, I imagine there was a lot of press, a lot of emotions. What differences did you notice in perhaps yourself and the other three members that was different on that day than the others?
I mean, this is how many years ago is this? But to me, it was just, in my mind, I got one more gig to leave this tour on a great note. You know what I mean? So I better bring it. But I mean, every gig is that way. You know what I mean? If you have a bad show, it's a bad next day. So I stay in the game, man. It's just another gig. You know, I don't really know. I'm sure they had some feelings and they were a little more emotional than they would be. But, you know, I can't speak for those guys. You know, all I know is that we were focused and we were laser focused on stage and we had a great show. But I do feel every show was like that. I mean, those guys, that's the one time I was on the stage and I was like, this is 110% how you do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of the time I'm playing in a band and, you know, the guitar player is not looking at the end, you know, drummer usually, you feel the end of the note from the drummer, the last note. And sometimes the guitar player is too worried about playing a solo or that guy's over there. And not Black Sabbath, you know, those guys stand alone, each of them. Every ending, they're turning around at me and we're a group. You know what I mean? So they don't think individually. Mm-hmm. Ozzy, Tony, and Geezer, when they're a team. They're an absolute team more than I've ever seen or been a part of on stage with guys. So I was like, yeah, this is how it's supposed, this is why it's so great, you know?
Now, what did you learn or what surprised you about working with Tony Iommi?
I don't think anything surprised me. It was probably exactly what I expected. Tony does have this, he's kind of a quiet guy, but his presence demands respect. He actually reminds me a way he reminds me, this is maybe going to sound a little cheesy, of my dad when we're playing music, meaning that you feel like you better sit up and bring it. You know what I mean? He has that kind of presence about him.
Right.
And they're all just top notch. And they're all professional and they all go up there and give it 110%. But he is so rock. He's the most rock solid guitar player I mean, that guy is a rock. He's a drummer. He's the best drummer ever on his guitar, mm-hmm. let alone his riffs. He's a mountain.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I would imagine that, the levity that he brings to a situation and the respect he commands, you want to be able to please him and to help further.
It's just an intense thing. You know, I know when I play, people are kind of like if they're not used to it, they may play with other drummers before me. And then it takes a minute to get adjusted to how I do mm-hmm. it. Because I'm usually a little more intense than the previous guy, I've noticed. So there's just a certain, I think we all connected on the approach of playing music, mm-hmm. you know, that's where I fit in. Because I feel that my approach and the way I thought about playing music was the way they've thought about playing music for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. And that's not comparing or anything. That's just saying that when you connect on a mindset and a wavelength, it's an easier process.
So backstage, after that final show,
will you let this last gig go?
I'm absolutely fascinated by it.
There was tears. Everybody was crying and hugging and, oh, my God. No, everybody just got off stage and they went home, to be honest with you.
Really? Okay.
Yep. All right. That being said, we did get together in the studio a few days later and we recorded and videoed some songs that hadn't been done on the tour, mm-hmm. just kind of like as a bonus thing to the album. And everybody said goodbye there. But, I mean, they're the old school guys. They don't really show emotions, you know?
Right. And then not long after that, you and Ozzy were working together on the next track.
That's true. Yes.
How much time was in between those two?
I don't remember. Maybe 6 to 8 months or something. I don't know.
So let's fast forward to earlier this year. You get a phone call from the Dead Daisies. Who makes the phone call?
I think their manager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They just said, we're looking for a drummer. Are you available? And I just say yes. And that's basically as cut and dried as it is. You know, I don't ask questions that don't concern me. Mm-hmm. Am I in? Yes. Not why, what's up? No, it doesn't. Are you in or out? I'm in. And they made a great album. They sent it to me to learn. I learned all the tunes and they told me who was playing in the band. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be working this year. So that sounds great. What else could I ask for?
This isn't the first time you played with the Dead Daisies. You toured with them about 5 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, I did a fill-in stint with them. 2015 it was. And mm-hmm. they were on a run with Kiss. And I forgot what happened. You know, again, they needed a drummer. And I said, sure, I'll be there. Yeah. And we did it, I think, maybe 4 weeks in Europe is right. What it was. That was a whole different, I think, all different guys besides David Lowie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doug wasn't in, different singer. But is this the first time you've played with Glenn?
Yeah, I've never played with Glenn. I've met Glenn a few times at Geezer Butler's house at like family functions that he's had. And Glenn's a friend with Geezer. So I've met him briefly a few times. And I've never, unfortunately, had the opportunity to play with them, but I'm really looking forward to it. And I really think we're going to connect really good.
So let's talk about your music listening habits. Are you a vinyl collector at all?
I do have records. And now that I have my daughter, that's slowed down because I can't even like listen to my brain for a second because there's so much going on. But I like going, me and my wife, when things are open, we like going to flea markets and like antique places. And mm-hmm. I usually get my records at those kind of places.
Ah, digging through the
when
crates.
When I do.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's kind of more of an adventure. You don't know what you're going to find. When you go to a record store, you're looking for something sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I'm at a place like that, and maybe some little weird crate in the corner, and I go, oh my God, this is $2. What a score. I would have never thought to get this.
Right.
You know, and that's cool to me.
What are some of the records you brought home recently?
Oh, recently. A drummer buddy of mine just sent me, his name is Greg Morrow. He's one of the best Nashville studio drummers in the world. He just sent me a Black Oak, Arkansas record. I'm trying to think of anything that I've bought. You know, it maybe could be like a Elmore James compilation record or something like that, because I'm really into blues stuff. And I have some country records that I love, like, I mean, it's more like rootsy kind of music that I get on vinyl, to be honest with you. Sometimes like pop music and stuff like that, or it doesn't translate to me in the same way on vinyl. Mm-hmm. I do find that like I go more blues, jazz, older rock on vinyl more so than more modern stuff.
All right. So the modern stuff is probably more on digital and.
Your phone and, you know. When I listen to music, it's usually in my car, unless I get it. Now, I did used to, before we had our baby, I used to like to wake up and have a cup of coffee and put on a record, but I'm too busy living my life now.
Now, I would imagine there's been many times in your life where you've had to quickly absorb music in order to be able to play or to audition or to, you know. When you listen to music, are you able to separate Tommy, the guy who has to learn this, and Tommy, the guy who's just enjoying this?
I think so. Mm-hmm. But I'm usually, if I like something, I usually start, I don't dissect, but I study and I try to, you know, what's making this cool? You know, my ear always probably goes to that. What's making this cool? Why do I like this? If that makes sense. But that's not, you know, that's kind of subliminal, if you know what I mean. it just kind of happens. But it's not anything extra thought. It just, you know.
Who are the drummers that give you more of those moments than others?
Nowadays, it's guys you wouldn't even know. It's like this drummer, I believe his name is Fred Belo, who played for Muddy Waters. And... you know, I listen to my favorite music, and they're not really big time drummers. But when I listen to great songs, like one of my favorite albums is Bob Seger Live Bullet. And I can just put that on and like, there's something magical about it to me. You know, when I listen to a great song, you know, usually the drums are a part of that. And if it's music that I like, then I'll listen to the drums. But it doesn't have to be like a drumistic drummer, you know, or I don't have to find out his name, or I'm not really worried about the labels of it all. I'm just kind of picking up on the music, you know. But I'll listen to the same stuff. I mean, I listen to the same stuff as 35 years ago, because I can listen and always go over and over and over because I love the music. But I'll still listen to Live Bullet. I mean, I've heard it 18 million times. I know every note to it, but then I can still pick something up, one little hi-hat thing or something the guitar player did or something that they did together, you know, and all the music that I listen to is like that. I'll just keep going over and over and rehashing. And I usually, that's kind of how I learn about music, is just going over and over and over, or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And YouTube is a cool way for that now. You know, you can see so much old stuff that wasn't out, and maybe you can see old videos of the drummers or see what they were doing or how did they, I don't get too technically involved in things, but it's pretty cool, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was watching a video the other day of, I think, Clyde Stubblefield, and watching his technique is like, amazing. It's great.
You a drummer by any chance?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. I'm a very bad bass player. But
okay.
I appreciate the rhythm section, but yeah, I'm much more of a listener than a participant. So with the Dead Daisies, you guys are making some plans for touring. Obviously, 2021, 2022, people are just itching to get out, not really wanting to confine yourself to a studio, I'm assuming. But have you guys talked about the possibility of recording something else in the next year or so?
Nothing's come up concerning me doing that, or I haven't heard. I think they're just going to focus on gigs because they haven't even played a gig on this album, you know, and I don't think the guys have even played a gig together, to be honest with you. So I think that's their number one focus, is just like, let's get the band out there and actually play for once.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
You've got quite a few legends on your resume. Now you're adding Glenn Hughes to it. Who else is on your radar for someone you'd like to play with someday?
God, there's so many great bands out there. Dead or Alive. Alive, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said future.
You would, yes, yeah. Someone who's possible.
I mean, I love Aerosmith. I love AC/DC. I'd love to play for AC/DC. I love Bob Seger. You know, that would be a moment to me to get to play for Bob Seger, because I remember going to see him and you know, like learning all the songs and practicing when I was a little kid. And the same with AC/DC. It's like, you know, it's music that was part of your life, you know. Who else would I like to play for? There's so many great bands. And I'm just getting warmed up, so who knows what's going
to
happen.
Tommy, I'm getting ready to wrap this up. Is there anything you want to talk about we haven't talked about?
No, I just really look forward to getting out there with the guys and making some good music and making a racket and making people's ears ring and, you know, having a safe, fun time. I just got my second vaccine, so, you know, you can cough on me and I won't have a freak out. And and things are looking good, I would say. Where are you calling from?
Sydney, Australia.
Oh, okay. Oh, and you're from LA, right?
Isn't no, that I'm true? From, is that what I'm actually from the Bay Area. I'm actually from San Jose, Santa Cruz, but I moved here 20 years ago.
What made you go out there?
Oh, I was chasing a girl.
Oh, of course. That's how, yeah.
Yeah. That's and I caught her. I caught her. She's upstairs and we've got kids as proof. So,
beautiful.
Yeah. It's a wonderful place to be. I mean, you've been to Sydney. It's a hard place to live.
I've been there many times. It's wonderful. It's clean and it's safe. I love touring there. Mm-hmm. Beautiful weather, nice looking people. People dress nice. There's great shops, beaches, even though I don't swim. But I love it down there. And the fans are always so appreciative. I hope we do gigs down there coming up, because, of course, everything's clear. I don't know why we're not doing their gig tonight down there.
We're already seeing shows. I was at a gig the other night. There was crowd surfing. You know, I think there's about...
Who played?
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Oh, I heard them like in a pizza place. This is like 5, 6, 7 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And it was just some stoner kids playing music. And I'm like, who's this band? It kind of sounded, I'm not really into the proggy stuff, but it was kind of cool. And they're like, oh, this is King Gizzard and the blah, blah, blahs. I'm like, oh, I made a mental note of it. They're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, well, they used to have two drummers. Now they're back down to one.
They got smart and realized one's enough.
Maybe they figured they wanted to tour with only one van. I don't know. But anyway, what's happening in Australia now is just a lot of Australian bands are just making the loops. And the problem we have now is multiple gigs on the same night. So now we have to start making choices.
Too much competition going on with the local stuff.
Well, everyone's going out and all the gigs are selling out. It's just the choice now. So if that's the problem, obviously we're blessed with that. But
right.
Yeah, hopefully the rest of the world will catch up soon. And you guys can come over because Dave's from here.
I really hope we do sooner than later.
Yeah. David, give you a place to crash here. It's
I'm too filthy. You don't want me in the house.
No worries, Tommy. Thanks again for coming on the show, and much appreciated you sharing those stories and allowing me to annoy you about questions about that last gig of Black Sabbath and all your other stories about how you approach your career. Because, I, when I watch you from afar, I know that this is a guy who has the professional edge. I knew that this interview was going to start bang on time because you're the type of guy who shows up on time and keeps his commitments and is authentic.
Yeah,
and does
probably, I end up driving around the block about 20 times whenever I get somewhere, so I'm not too early.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What do they say in Japan? If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late.
Nate, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for taking the time and listening to this middle-aged crazy rocker talk about what he loves. And I look forward to seeing everybody out there. I know the guys with the Daisies are really looking forward to it, and I'm excited to play with those gentlemen.
Yes. All right, so the Dead Daisies, again, Get Out of the House tour starting at the end of June. Some additional dates are starting to come up. There's one in Lake Park, Florida.
I told them Get Out of the House, but they didn't go for it.
Yeah. Well, it'll be that. We know that that's it in spirit.
At least that's what my wife screams at me every day.
Yeah, you getting out of the house gives her a vacation too.
Exactly.
Lake Park, Florida, Nashville, Tennessee, Chattanooga, Columbus, Ohio, Louisville, Kentucky, Battle Creek, Michigan, Harrison, Ohio, Oslo, Norway in 2022, France, Hungary. It's all happening. Get up to thedeaddaisies.com. Grab your tickets. Again, Tommy, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guy.
Thank you so much, Vinyl Guy. I'm the rock guy.
Right? You are.
The best.
Take care, mate.
Thank you so much, Tommy, for coming on The Vinyl Guide. Again, everyone, head up to thedeaddaisies.com for the tour dates. Head to your streaming services for that Like No Other 2021 track. And also, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/vinylguide, where you get a video of the conversation Tommy and I had, plus a ton of extras. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. And thanks in advance for your support. And that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please, please, please share these episodes out on your social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, share them on Instagram. Do whatever you got to do to help spread the word of The Vinyl Guide podcast. Positive reviews are hugely helpful as well. 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars, whatever platform you get these podcasts on, go up there and shout from the mountaintops and try to make us blush. That is always welcome. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.